to do, I want to start out with a question. Will you ever be called upon to stand up for God's people? It may sound like a strange question. Well, you know, I'll stand up if something happens and I need to, you know, if somebody's being attacked in the parking lot, sure, I'll stand up for them. That would seem obvious. But I want to ask it again. Will you ever be called upon to stand up for God's people? In other words, will there ever come a time when you're the one that has to say, no, I'm going to stand in the gap and I'm going to be the one to say, if something's going to happen to God's people, you've got to go through me to get there. We've talked about that somewhat in the past, but if so, when will that happen? It's kind of a rhetorical question in a way. We never know, do we, when we're going to be called upon to stand in the gap. I was looking at some news clippings this week. You saw the train conductor that knew that there was a problem with the train, and he went racing through the train trying to tell people, duck and cover, we're going to have problems. And he actually saved a lot of people's lives. He didn't know when he got up that morning that he was going to have to do that. When will we be called upon to stand up for God's people? I would tell you it probably will be when you least expect it. But there will and probably will be a time when you will have to stand up for God's people. Will you, as a member of the church, be ready to stand up when it is time to stand up? And what preparations can we be doing now that will help us then to be able to stand in the gap and to stand up and to be counted? I want to go through the book of Esther today, because this happened to Esther. When you think about what this young lady had to go through, it is stunning. It's amazing. It's one of the most amazing stories in the Bible when you think about what it is that she had to do. And as I like to do, I would like for us to be drawing parallels today. What if this were you? What if you were the one that had to stand up for your people? So let's go to the book of Esther. We'll spend most of our time in the book of Esther today, but there will be a couple of occasions to go other places. It's not a long book, and I won't read all of it, just because I have to do it all in an hour, or an hour and 15, or an hour and 20, however long it takes me to get through it. Ralph Levy did it just recently in a four-hour FI online, for those of you that may have seen that. But I want to review the life of a very ordinary young woman. By all accounts, Esther was probably no more than a teenager when all of this happened. In fact, some of the commentaries say that she was probably 13, 14, or 15 years old. Now, I want to ask a question. How many of you in here are somewhere between 12 and 17? Let me see your hands. Put your hand down. All right, so got hands up, 12 to 17. All right, we got 1, 2, 3, 4. Think about the people that are that age. Think of the people that are just newly in the teen program. What would you do? And for those of you that raised your hand, I want you to think about what it's like to be someone like an Esther, for you to be the ones that would have to stand up for the rest of the congregation, because something bad is going to happen to the congregation and you're the ones that have to protect us. Think about that. It's going to be kind of an interesting scenario as we go through this. If this were you, now I would put this back to the adults, how would you respond if you're the one that has to stand in the gap and be counted? The story is all about God's hand in the lives of his people. But interestingly enough, in the book of Esther, the word and the name God is not there at all. And yet his hand is all through the book. It almost, if you read the book, it's almost like whoever the author was took pains to not use the word God or the name God or Elohim or any of the Yahweh, any of the other words. But yet you can see God's hand through it all. I want to give a little background of the book, and we'll start by reading in Esther chapter 1, the first four verses, because it helps set the stage for what was happening. Esther chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, and this was the Ahasuerus who reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. This is not a small group of nations or whatever. This is the empire at the time. Verse 2, in those days the king sat on his throne in his kingdom, which is in Shushan, the citadel. And in the third year of his reign, he made a feast for all of his officials and servants. the powers of Media and Persia and the nobles and the princes and the provinces being before him. And he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the splendor of his excellency for many days. In fact, this party lasted 180 days. He gave a party that lasted a half a year. Can you imagine going to a party lasting a half a year? And as you read through this, the wine flowed the whole 180-something days. There were people that were in serious inebriation, which I'm sure would include the king. So Ahasuerus is undoubtedly also Artaxerxes, or Xerxes in the Greek, the son of Darius. You see him in many places in the Bible. This was the king of Persia. Now notice what happens in verse 5. When the days were completed, the king made another feast lasting 7 days. You know, that 180 days wasn't enough. We had to have a second party of an additional 7 days. For all the people who were present in Shushan, the citadel, from the great to the small in the court of the king's palace. So we now have another opportunity to drink some more wine. Let's drop down to verse 10. On the seventh day, so this is the last day of this second feast, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, I am sure that is an understatement, it was probably past merry, he commanded, and then there's a list of all of these important men that were in the court. These were eunuchs, seven eunuchs, who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials. There are a couple of translations that say wearing nothing but the crown. If you get an idea of you know, the king in his inebriation wants to show off his beautiful wife to a bunch of men. Imagine what you would be doing if your husband commanded that of you. For she was beautiful to behold. Verse 12, but Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command brought by his eunuchs. Therefore the king was furious and his anger burned within him. Well, I can understand her desire not to show herself off in front of strange men. That's not anything that any of us would want to do. And so because of that, something is going to happen. Verse 13. This is to me, is one of the funny parts of this. There are several in here. I love finding humor in things. The king said to the wise men who understood the times, you're going to see how funny this is in just a little bit. For this was the king's manner toward all who knew law and justice. Those closest to him, and he mentions the names again, who had access to the king's presence and who ranked high in the kingdom. Verse 15, what shall we do to Queen Vashti according to the law, because she didn't obey the king who were brought to her by the eunuchs? Now, you're going to see that it isn't the fact that she disobeyed the king. It's the fact that she made the king look bad in front of other men. This is going to be the real problem. This is his pride that's getting hurt. Hopefully, a day or two after the inebriation wears off, he hopefully came to himself and realized a very dumb thing that he did. One thing that you need to understand about the laws of the Medes and the Persians is once the king says something, there is no turning back. Even if the king himself decides that he's made a mistake, once a law is enacted, it cannot be circumvented. And so with that, they have to figure out what to do. Verse 16, one of the men here, Memucan, says to the king, Queen Vashti has not only wronged the king, but also all of the princes, princes being male, and all of the people who are in all the provinces of the king. For the queen's behavior will become known to all women so that they will despise their husbands. Ah, so here's the real problem. She stood up against her husband in a male-dominated society. That's just, you just can't do that. So king, we got to do something or all the women are going to rebel against their husbands. You know, if you ever see somebody on television stand up, you know, some woman stand up on television, you look at that and say, uh-huh, I'm going to do that to my husband. Now, they're really overreacting here. But at the same time, this was, like I say, a male-dominated society. Verse 18, this very day the noble ladies of Persia and Media will say to all the king's officials that they have heard of the behavior of the queen, and there will be excessive contempt and wrath. My, oh my. Verse 19, if it pleases the king, let a royal decree go out from him, and let it be recorded in the law of the Medes and the Persians, it says, so that it will not be altered, that Vashti will come no more before the king, and that the king will give her royal position to another who is better than she. And when the king's decree, which he will make, is proclaimed throughout all the empire, then all the wives will honor their husbands, and we'll have this terrible problem solved of women standing up against their men. Imagine that. So, still in his inebriated state, he signs a law. Now, I think as you read through this a little later on, I think you see that he probably regretted the fact that he had done that. But the law is the law, and there's nothing he can do now. He has banished Queen Vashti. Now, I want you to stop. I'm going to do this every once in a while in the story. And I want us to kind of take away from Esther, and I want you to think of 2016 and how you respond to things. What events are happening in the world over which you have no control that may affect your life someday? Seems like an odd question. This whole scenario with Queen Vashti, I'm sure Esther probably didn't even know what was going on. Right? She's living in a city. The king and the queen have a problem. And you remember when you saw Prince Charles and Lady Di and they went through their divorce? Did you ever think that divorce would affect you personally for the rest of your life and make you have to stand in the gap for God or for his people? What events are going to happen in the world where you are going to be called upon one of these days to stand up? It happened to Esther. I want you to consider that as we go through this. How can world events change on a dime? I find it interesting as I read through what's happening in the laws. I think I might have mentioned it here. I hope I did. If I didn't, thankfully, Louisiana has signed into law, or it's going through the process, that pastors don't have to marry gay and lesbian people. There are only three states in the union that have that law, and Louisiana is one of them. And if it hasn't finished going through the system yet, it's winding its way through. But world events can change on a dime. Let's go to chapter 2, and let's read a little more as we set the plot. Chapter 2. In verse 1, after these things, when the king's wrath had subsided, I'm going to put in parentheses, after the wine wore off, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. And then the king's servants who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all of the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins to Shushan the citadel, into the women's quarters under the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, custodian of the women, and let beauty preparations be given to them. Then let the young women who please the king, let the young woman who pleased the king be queen instead of Vashti. Can you imagine this happening today? All of a sudden, whoever is in control of our government or whatever government of the world says, you know what, we're going to go around and we're going to gather up all of these girls that are potentially 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, we're going to take them away from their families and we're going to put them in a harem to please the king. This happened to Queen Vashti, or to Esther. Can you imagine what that would be like? Think about that. Fathers, your daughter is ripped away from you and put into a harem to please a king, a pagan king. Think about it, girls. What would it be like for you, 13, 14, 15 years old, to all of a sudden be taken away from your families and put into this scenario? As we read through this, I would like for us to internalize what it is that's happening here, because this actually happened to someone of Jewish extraction. And this thing pleased the king, and he did so. Verse 5. In Shushan the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai. He was the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. And Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives who had been captured with Jeconiah. So King Jeconiah, when he was taken into captivity, into the Babylonian captivity, all the Jews at that point in time went with them. And then Babylon was conquered and Persia has now taken over, but the Jews are still in captivity. So these are a captive people. These are people that aren't free to do what they want. They are free to do what the king wants. And that's where they find themselves. Let's keep going. Verse 7. And Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. And the young woman was lovely and beautiful. And when her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. If we have this correct, this is an older cousin who the mother and father of Esther die, and she has nowhere to go. And so he was the closest next of kin, the closest male next of kin. And so it was his responsibility as probably the first cousin. Some of you have that. Like I have first cousins that are 10, 15, 20 years older than me. This probably was something similar to that, where an older first cousin now has the responsibility of raising a 13, 14, 15-year-old girl because the parents have died. So this is who Queen Esther is. She's not of royal stock. She's not rich. She is an orphan, a young woman and an orphan. How about us? You're going to see in just a little bit that God used this woman in an amazing capacity. Do you think that Queen Esther, or before she was Esther, when she was just Esther, do you ever think that at age 12, 13, or 14, she thought, you know, at some point in time, I'm going to have to stand up for my people and be counted? What in her wildest dreams? I mean, if she were alive today, she would be into, you know, whatever musical thing is going on or whatever new app is on her iPhone or whatever. I mean, that's just what she would be into. And yet this girl now has something that is going to happen to her. What about us? Will there come a time when God will say, I need you to stand up for my people, for your people? What is keeping us from being used greatly by God? I have a couple of stories that I'll talk about in just a little while, but I think it's interesting. Sometimes we as people say, well, I'm not a good speaker, so God would never use me. Does that sound familiar? Did someone in the Bible do that? Yeah, Moses. I'm not wealthy. Okay, God doesn't need money. He made money, and he made gold, and he can do it. I'm not a minister. That's the minister's job, or that's the headquarters job. Okay, no, Esther wasn't a minister. A lot of the people in the Bible that are called into service, some of them called at an extremely young age. She may not have even been an adult at this time. For you that are teenagers, could God use you even over your parents? God didn't call Mordecai into this. He called Esther. Could your parents perhaps not even be the ones that God would call, but he would call you? We're going to see an interesting turn of events as we go on. There are a lot of examples of teens and preteens being called. Eli and others that were called even as young children, they are called into service of God. When will you be called and will you answer that call? Chapter 2 and verse 8. And so it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan the citadel under the custody of Haggai, that Esther was also taken into the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. She is taken away from her family, which her family's died, so the closest family she's got is Mordecai, who is mortified, if I can tell a joke. I mean, you're going to see him walking back and forth in front of this palace where they are, just worried to death over this woman that he is responsible for. But going on in verse 9, now the woman pleased him, the eunuch, and she obtained his favor. So he readily gave beauty preparations to her besides her allowance. And 7 choice maid servants were provided for her from the king's palace. And he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. I'm going to ask a question a little while later, and I want you to consider it. Why was she given this special treatment over everybody else? Was it because she was the prettiest? Or was there something else that was going on here? We'll talk about that as we get toward the end. But for some reason, she finds special pleasure from one of the eunuchs there. And so Esther is put into a special place. Again, this isn't something that she's planned. She's taken from her husband, from her cousin, into a life of servitude, into a harem to please a pagan king. What would you do? I want to put this back to you again. If you found yourself being taken into captivity, put in jail, put in prison for your beliefs or for something that happened because God had a time and a place to use you, you think it's not possible? It can't be one of me. Right? I'm sure Esther thought the same thing. She was just a young girl at the time that this happened, and yet she was going to be used for an amazing thing. I'm sure at one point in time she even thought, where's God? Have you ever asked that question when you're going through a trial? Where's God? In fact, we're going to find that God was there the entire time, and he was orchestrating things. I'm sure that she didn't realize that. I know Mordecai didn't realize that. He's pacing out in front of the palace trying to figure out what he can do to get her back. I don't think that any of them realized at the time that God had a secret and that he was preparing this. Look at verse 10. Esther had not revealed her people or her family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. I asked myself that question, why? I'm just one of those people that always, I stop and read and I ask questions. It takes me a long time to read something because I'm always stopping and asking questions. Why would Mordecai tell her not to reveal it? I did a little bit of research just to see what some other commentators think about why he did this. And a couple of interesting things came back. As Jewish slaves, they were kind of looked down upon, and yet all these beautiful women were brought in to the king. The Persian king at this time was only allowed to marry in one of seven royal families. Now, that can be quite extensive. You can have, you know, third and fourth and fifth cousins and all the way out. But you have to marry within existing royalty, and Esther wasn't. But she was taken anyway. What would have happened to Esther had she said, oh, by the way, I'm Jewish? Off with your head, out you go. So Mordecai thought, well, you know what, the best thing probably, just don't let them know that you're Jewish, because that could mean your death. And as an obedient young woman, hint, hint, to all of you young ladies, obey those that have an authority over you, that probably saved her life. And we're going to see that it also played out for this secret that God has too. So why did Mordecai do this? Probably because she would have been killed outright as a non-Persian. For Esther, hiding her identity saved her life. Yet in the end, we know that God guided this decision and that it would play into the story thread. How many of us are like this? How many of us, and I don't want a show of hands here, this is just a rhetorical question, hide our religion, hide our religious beliefs? How many people at school, how many people at work know that you're a Sabbath keeper? Now, for some of you, you're very open about it. Can't work tonight, you know, Sabbath. I'm going to go put my yarmulke on or whatever. No, you know what I'm talking about. Some people are just very open. I was talking with a teenager one time. He was a teenager at the time, and this was probably when he was 25, and he was telling me later on, you know, I told all my friends, said, well, you know, we're going to a party Saturday night or Friday night, or we're going to play basketball. Let's go to the basketball game. Let's go to the football game. And he told his friends for years that the reason why he couldn't do anything on Friday night was because his parents had a condo somewhere, and that every Friday after work they would get in the car and go to this condo, and I'm spending my time at the beach and I'm having fun with friends out there. Lied through his teeth because he was embarrassed by the fact that he was keeping the Sabbath as a teenager. Sometimes I think we can be like that. I would imagine as time goes on and as things heat up and it gets a little bit harder, or maybe a lot harder, to be a Christian following God's way of life, that some of us may be more reclusive and not let it known that we are actually Sabbath keepers. Sometimes we live as unknowns among our peers. In this case, it worked out good for her. Verse 15 of chapter 2. Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai and the king eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all that saw her. They were allowed to bring anything they wanted with them. So what does Esther do? Esther goes to the man who is in charge and says, what's the smart thing for me to do? What should I take in with me? And the guy says, I know the king, I know what he thinks. Here's what you should take in with you. So instead of just trying to please herself, she's thinking, how can I get through this very bad situation? This probably a teenage young woman who's being taken before a pagan king to serve his needs. She's doing what she can to try and survive a very bad situation. Verse 16. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther more than all of the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the other virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And then the king made a great feast called the Feast of Esther for all his officials and servants. And he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king. What would have been going through Esther's mind at this point in time? There are perhaps 100 girls, and this may have taken, if you think about it, this may have taken up to a year or two or three to go through all of these women. He gets one a night trying to figure out which one is going to become the queen. She may have sat there in that harem for well over a year, maybe 2 or 3 years before it came her turn to go before the king. Would she have been elated or infuriated? Sometimes we read this and say, oh, well, she became queen. Right, she was also kidnapped from her family and forced into this life. I don't know what would have been going through her mind, but whatever it was, I'm sure, again, she was asking the question, where is God? Why isn't he protecting me? What is going on? I'm sure that it was something that she just couldn't fathom in her mind, why this was happening to her. Brethren, as time moves on, I think that there will be opportunities for us too, and it may be as things happen that we don't know what God has in mind for us, but I still think that there are times when we go through trials that actually help other people with whom we come in contact with. But at the time we're going through them, we're certainly not happy about it. You just never know what it is that God may put us through so that it can help further the gospel. I want to read from a book. It was called All the Women of the Bible by Herbert Lockyer. If some of you went to the ladies' Bible study, you may have read from that. One of the quotes that he made about Esther is he says, "This fast-moving action in this drama is eloquent with the overruling providence of God who brought Esther to the throne for such a time." Esther was brought in front of the king. It's interesting when things like that happen. You go back and you read even Mr. Armstrong's autobiography of the very first time that he was brought in front of a king. Do you remember what it was that brought him in front of a king? Somebody showed one of the rulers of Europe a copy of the yearbook, of the Ambassador College yearbook. And when he looked through that, he said, "I want to meet the person behind this book." And that was how he got to see the very first royalty. From there, he saw almost every leader of the country, of any of the countries around the world that were alive at the time. What will happen that will bring you in front of the king? Don't know. But the plot thickens. Let's continue on. Chapter 2, verse 21. "In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gates," why is he sitting within the king's gates? He's pacing back and forth trying to figure out where his cousin is. So he just happens to be sitting there. "And two of the king's eunuchs," and names them here, "doorkeepers became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus." There's a plot to assassinate the king. "So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Esther, who informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both men were hanged on the gallows, as it is written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king." It's just an event. It's almost like a separate thing that happens. Esther's off doing this thing. Mordecai's pacing back and forth trying to figure out what's happened to his cousin, and happens on a plot to assassinate the king, reports it, and now Mordecai is, in essence, responsible for saving the king's life. So Mordecai discovers this. While God isn't mentioned, I think it's evident that he was involved in making sure that Mordecai was at the right place at the right time. Esther was also at the right place at the right time, because Mordecai told Esther, who told the king. If Esther hadn't been there, that plot may not have been known, because Mordecai may have said, "Well, I don't have any stake in this game," right? And just walked away. But this worked out. You can see how God is establishing this to where it's going to set up to where the people of God are going to be protected. Let's go on. Chapter 3, verse 1. "After these things, King Ahasuerus promotes Haman, the son of an Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him." This is the point of the story where everyone goes, boo, because Haman's coming into the room. This is the bad guy. "All the king's servants who were with the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman." Once Haman was in a certain position, then you were supposed to bow before him. For the king had commanded concerning him. King had commanded. This is now laws of the Medes and the Persians. You can't, if the king says you have to bow before Haman, you have to do it. Not even the king can redress that. Verse 3, then the king's servants who were within the, oh sorry, let's go back a bit. But Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Why not? God said you don't bow before idols, you don't bow before other people, you don't bow before kings. Mordecai answered to God, he didn't answer to this king, so he wasn't going to bow before him. Verse 3, then the king's servants who were with the king's gate said to Mordecai, why are you transgressing the king's command? Now it happened when they spoke to him daily that he would not listen to them, and they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. For Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. Then Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay homage, and he was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the entire kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. So now you've got Esther, who is the queen, who hasn't told the king that she's Jewish, and you've got a plot that's now hatching that every Jew within the entire reign of the Persian Empire, from India to Ethiopia, are going to be exterminated. Do you think that Esther ever thought in her wildest dream that she would be in the middle of a genocide plot to wipe out the people of God? What if you're the one that's told to stand up to protect the church of God or the people of God from some impending disaster that may happen? It could happen. It happened to her. Where will you be when the name is called? Sometimes things that occur in our lives, too, that are game changers, and we don't know where those trials will pop up, but we need to be ready. I want you to notice something interesting that Haman says to the king, because this is true of us, and I would like for you to consider this as those of us in the church of God. Then Haman said to the king, there is a certain people. I can almost imagine the boss of a company who's got somebody that won't come to work on Saturday, even though he's demanded it. You know, or we're going to have a pizza party on Saturday and you're going to be there. Well, no, I actually can't. Then Haman said to the king, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom, and their laws are different from everybody else's. You ever feel like that? The laws that you keep are different from everybody else's? We don't go to Mardi Gras. Why not? We don't do Christmas and Easter. Why not? Why do we keep the Sabbath? That's strange. This is a work day, don't you know? If you want to get ahead in the world, I was told that. I had a chance to go from senior management to director, but I had to agree to come in on the Sabbath. I can't do that. Well, you're passing up an opportunity to make a lot of money. Yes, I am. That's just fine. Right? But that's what happens, and that's what happened here. Their laws are different than everybody else's laws, and they don't keep the king's laws. It may come a time, brethren, and I can see it happening now, and I'm sure you can too, when the laws of God are going to be different than the laws of the United States. It's happening right now. We can see that. There may come a time when we disobey the law to obey God. Will you stand in the gap? Interesting. Your lifestyle will eventually attract attention. You can try and hide amongst your classmates or your workmates, but eventually your lifestyle is going to get found out. If you are trusting God and you are staying with Him, you don't need a position in the church. You don't need to be a minister. You don't need to be an old person. You will stand out, and people will know that you are a member of this church. Chapter 4, verse 1, enter Esther. When Mordecai learned of what had happened, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went into the middle of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry. He knew that they were all going to be exterminated. He knew that this was a law of the Medes and Persians and could not be retracted. This isn't him saying, oh, I wish that the king would change his mind. The king can't change his mind. Even if the king decides that he's made a mistake, he can't change it. And Mordecai realizes this. Verse 3, and in every province where the king's command and decree arrived, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. I mean, this was a universal decree that went out, as Ralph Levy describes it, it went out in all of the languages And everybody knew that this was going to happen. Verse 4. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her, and the queen was deeply distressed. And she sent garments to clothe Mordecai. She's not trying to fix it. She knows that law's been made. She's not trying to do anything about that. She's just trying to get Mordecai out of sackcloth and ashes because he's going to get himself in trouble. She's trying to get her older cousin to put regular clothes back on. But he would not accept them. Verse 5, and Esther called Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he appointed to attend, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai to learn what was going on. So Hathach went out to Mordecai, which is in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him everything that had happened, the sum of money, Haman, the promise to the king, the whole thing. Verse 8, and he also gave him a copy of the written decree for the Jews' destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther. So verse 9, he returns and tells Esther the words of Mordecai. Now Esther has got in her hand the fact that her entire race is going to be exterminated in a mass genocide. She's probably a teenage girl. She is queen, but if you know anything about the way these kings worked, and you even see this in the story, if she comes before the king without being asked, her head gets chopped off immediately. This is not like she's got this extreme power. She is a young girl who now has the fate of an entire race of people on her shoulders. She never expected that when she was going into that. This is amazing. Again, I would ask you the question, when something like this happens to us, what response would we have? Look at what her first response was. Verse 10. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command to Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or a woman goes into the inner court of the king who has not been called, he has but one law to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the scepter that he may live. I have not been called to go before the king for 30 days. So what's her first response? Not me. No way. I got this. I recognize it. Think of this from her perspective. This is a law of the Medes and Persians. There's nothing she can do to change this. Mordecai says, go talk to him. And she's like, there is no way that I'm going. My head will come off. So her first response is no way. What would your first response be? If you, as a 13 or 14 or 15-year-old young lady, or as a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old person, says, I need for you to stand up for the Church of God. What's your first response going to be? What, me? That was her first response. Let's look and see what else she says. And I just want to make the point here. Sometimes we might even say, when something like this happens, well, go talk to my pastor or go talk to headquarters. I mean, I'm not the church. Yes, you are the church, too. The church is the people. The church isn't the leadership. Sometimes I think that there may be an opportunity for us to be called. Remember Peter, just as an aside, when he was warming himself by the fire, and someone said, well, aren't you one of his? And he cussed and swore and said, no. He should have stood up and said, yeah, you know what, I am. But he didn't have the courage to at the time. He did later, but he didn't at the time. Is God preparing us for an event like that? If he calls your name, will you be ready? If you're handed a decree, will you stand in the gap? Or will you do what she did and say, not now? Let's keep on reading. Mordecai says something back to her that I think is really amazing. Mordecai tells them to answer back to Esther. Do you think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than any of the other Jews? When he finally finds out that you're a Jew, do you think that you know what? All he has to do is lop your head off and then have another beauty pageant. He'll have another queen and he won't think twice about you. That's what Mordecai says back to her. Let me see. Verse 14. If you remain completely silent at this time, this is real faith on Mordecai's part. If you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from someplace. God has promised he will protect his people. But you, Esther, are in the driver's seat here. You can help us take care of this. But if you won't do it, he's given her an out. You can sidestep this if you want, because God will protect us. But you and your father's house will perish. just recognize, Esther, that I'm going to be killed and so will you, because it's going to get found out that you're Jewish. And here's the statement, yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? I want you to personalize that. Who knows whether you have been called into the church of God for such a time as this? Will there come a time when you have to stand up and be counted? Queen Esther did when she was probably a teenager, a girl, not a woman, not someone who had been around for a long time. We're talking about a young lady here. She now has to figure out what she's going to do. Then look at what happens after she realizes this. Verse 15, then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast also, and I will go before the king, which is against the law. She knows she is breaking the law. Sometimes to stand up for the truth of God, we may have to break the law. And then she says, and if I perish, I perish. Now, that's very different than the not me response that she had given just a little while ago. But when everything is explained, she says, this is my time. I've got to stand up for the people of God. And if I perish, I perish. Is God preparing us for a yet future event? Where will you be when he calls your name, and will you be ready? I want to set Esther aside for a moment. We'll come back to this. I want to look at a couple of scriptures. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 in verse 11. First Peter 2, 11 and 12. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, and have your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Now, let's put this in the context of Esther. Esther is a sojourner. She's a slave. She's in the land of Persia. She's not in her own land. And yet she has lived her life abstaining from fleshly lusts, and she has kept her conduct honorable among the Persians. As a result, when Haman starts to speak evil against the people of God, when they speak evil against you as evildoers, that you, by your good works, may glorify God in the day of visitation. Because of who she was, because of her character, because of what she was able to do by standing up for the truth of God, she was able to make a difference, even though her entire race was in trouble. This says in 1 Peter that we are chosen and prepared for whatever he desires. There may be a reason why you are called into this church right now for something that you may need to do on behalf of the church of God in the future. Will you be ready for that if it is your time to do it? While we wait for his bidding, we are to keep our conduct pure and steady. You see that in Esther. You see that in many of the people of the Bible who stood in the gap and were ready to be counted. Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10. Ephesians 6 verse 10 through 13. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Is that your might? This isn't your might, this is his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. It may seem like that. She wasn't wrestling against Haman. Haman wasn't the issue. There was a power behind Haman that was working this, trying to get rid of the Jewish people. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but we wrestle against principalities and powers and the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. That was what was really behind this. She didn't have to fear Haman. He was a man. That wasn't the problem. The problem was a much bigger problem. It was a spiritual problem. Verse 13, therefore take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Interesting, isn't it? When will that evil day come? When will the opportunity come where you need to stand in the gap? Verse 14, stand therefore, having girded yourself And he goes through and talks about this armor of God. We need to be able to stand. Verse 11 tells us that there will come a time when we need to take a stand. When we are called to do that, we'll be ready. Finally, let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 4, and then we'll get back to finish off Esther. 2 Timothy 4, verses 1 through 5. I charge you therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing and at his kingdom. Preach the word. Notice what he says here. Be ready in season and out of season. You know, there are times when we're ready. If we know, as an example, that we are going to have to go before a judge. Let's say that that we have decided that we think that my mind's just gone blank. Jury duty is wrong. And so you call me and say, give me some ammunition. I'm going to go before the judge. And I send you a paper that we've done on it, and you read about it. That's being ready in season, right? You know it's coming. But you also need to be ready out of season, because you don't know when something like this is going to happen. Esther certainly didn't. This wasn't something that she had planned on. Okay, well, I'm going to become queen, and then when the Jews are about to be annihilated, I can step up and be the heroess. No, that's not how it happened. She didn't know this was going to happen. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. 4, verse 3, a time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to fables. But you, be watchful in all things, endure afflictions, and do the work of an evangelist, and fulfill your ministry. It's very interesting, isn't it, that we are told that there will come times when we are surrounded by a lot of bad stuff. But in the middle of all of that, we have to be ready in season and out of season to stand up for the truth of God. All right, let's go back to the book of Esther, since I am fast running out of time. And let's go to chapter 4. So once Esther finally saw the situation, she says, "If I perish, I perish." I want you to notice something else very interesting here. This is in verse 16. If I perish, I perish. Notice the very next verse, verse 17. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Mordecai was in charge before. Now Esther is the one that's in charge, and Mordecai obeys her. You 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, will there ever come a time when you have to tell your parents what to do? Ooh, that sounds like fun, doesn't it? That may happen. You may be the leader one of these days that steps up and your parents say, "Yes, ma'am," or "Yes, sir." Who knows? Who knows what may happen? Will you be ready to take that call? She saw the need. She stepped up to the plate. A young woman leading a three-day national fasting and prayer. Can you imagine that? Being a teenage girl and saying, "I'm going to call a national 3 days of fasting and prayer." It's exactly what happened. How did God answer that prayer for Esther? I am positive that when Esther prayed, she said, "And here's how I want you to work it out." And God smiled politely and said, I've got a much better way. But it didn't happen like she thought. Won't happen like we think either. We just don't know sometimes as we go through trials what God is working out. And we may be in our selfishness thinking, "Why me?" And God is saying, "Because of them." Yeah, somebody's going to see you go through this. They're going to see you come through this, and it's going to be an inspiration to them. You never know. God has promised that he will take care of us, and he will fix the problem. Chapter 5, verse 1. Now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes. There's something unspoken there. She had taken her royal robes off for 3 days and went through fasting and prayer. But at the end of those 3 days, does she continue to mope? Does she continue to mourn? She takes off the sackcloth and the ashes, and she puts back on her royal robes. What did she say? 3 days. And so that's what she did. At the end of the third day, she put back her royal robes, stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house, while the king sat on the throne in the royal house facing the entrance of the house. Verse 2, and so it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court. There were one of two things that could happen. She would lose her head, or he could hold out his scepter to her. That she found favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand, and Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said, "What would you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? I will give it to you up to half the kingdom." So Esther answered and said, "If it please the king, let the king and Haman come to a banquet that I have prepared." And the king said, "Bring Haman quickly and do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. This actually happened twice. I won't take the time to read this. I'm not sure why she did it like this. I don't know if she maybe had a panic attack and decided not to say anything the first time or not, but she actually does this twice. Who knows why? I find that interesting. Maybe we can ask her one of these days why she did this. But we know that in the midst of this, this plot is thickening, and Esther is going to tell the king what happens. Let's drop down to verse 9. So Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. Why? Because he's invited to a banquet with the king and the queen. Nobody else in the kingdom is invited to this. This is three people, king, queen, and me. I can't get any higher than this. Boy, he's going out with a high hand. He is excited. But when Haman saw Mordecai, his countenance changed and he got irritated. Right? So he walks out with happiness. He sees Mordecai, and then immediately that cloud comes over, dialing into that anger channel that Satan's got out there for him. And we talked about that in the past. You can just see his countenance change all of a sudden. Nevertheless, verse 10, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent and called for his friends and his wife, and he told them of all the wonderful things that were going to happen to him. So we know that that he is going to this wonderful thing, but then he tells his wife about this evil Haman. And what does the wife say? Verse 14, then his wife Jeresh and all his friends said to him, "Make a gallows 50 cubits high." How tall is a person? You only need a gallows that's 3 cubits high, but they're going to make it 50 cubits. That's like a four-story building or whatever. They're going to make this gallows so high. It's ridiculous. And in the morning, suggested the king that Mordecai be hanged on it, and then go merrily to the king's banquet. So they got this all planned out. And it pleased Haman's, and he had the gallows made. God will intervene in a way that no one would have thought. Chapter 6 and verse 1. Now here we see the hand of God, even though it's never mentioned. God's name is never mentioned. That night the king couldn't sleep. Any of you ever have a sleepless night where you get up and you decide, well, I'm just going to read? Yeah, that's what he does. He didn't have a TV back then. He didn't have an iPad, so he called for some books. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles to be read before the king, and it was found that Mordecai had told him of this assassination plot. Verse 3, and the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai?" And the kings, I'm sure they're looking through the books going, well, it doesn't look like we did anything for him. So the king now wants to reward Mordecai for this amazing thing that he has done. So the king says, "Who's in the court?" Verse 4. Now, Haman just happened to be there. It just happened. God planted Haman there. This is all working out the way God wants it. Haman just entered the outside of the king's palace to suggest to the king that they hang Mordecai. So he's going in to suggest Mordecai get hung. The king is going to be suggesting to Haman, we need to do something good for Mordecai. You see how this is coming to a head here? I love the way this works. Verse 6, so Haman came in, and the king said, "What should be done for the man to whom the king delights to honor?" Well, who does Mordecai think who does Haman think he's talking about? Well, it's got to be me. I mean, I'm the only one that gets invited to these king and queen dinners. So he comes up with this, oh, well, you should parade him through town. You should put the best robe on him. And then the king says, go and do this for Mordecai. He is just about to tell the king we should kill Mordecai, and Mordecai now is going to be honored. And guess who gets to lead the procession? Haman. So Haman's holding on the rein of the horse. Mordecai's on the horse. He's all dressed up in finery, and look what it says that he has to do. Verse 9, about halfway through. Then parade Mordecai on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, thus it shall be done to the man to whom the king delights to honor. So Haman's now having to go through and shout, this is who the king wants to honor, and this is what happens when you do. Oh, boy. Total humiliation. Total humiliation. this is going to go really bad for Haman. If you haven't figured it out, Haman is about to be taken care of. The absolute humiliation. Go to chapter 7. Again, I won't go through it all since we're running out of time. Chapter 7, verse 1. So the king and Haman then go to dine with Esther. I'm sure going in there, Haman is irritated because he's had to do this for Mordecai. But he's going to this wonderful dinner, so it's all going to be good. And on the second day of the banquet of the wine, the king said to Esther, "Why have you done this? You've done this twice now. You've called the three of us. You didn't tell me the first time. What is it now, even up to half the kingdom?" Verse 3, Queen Esther answers and said, "If I have found favor in your sight, and if it please the king, let my life be given at my petition. I am willing to die for what it is that I'm telling you now." That's very different than the woman that said, "Not me." This is now a woman who is telling the king, "I am willing to die for what I believe." That's an amazing change of statement. "Let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated." She still hasn't told the king who she is. She just is telling the king, "I and my people are about to die. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could not compensate for the king's loss." So King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, "Who is he that has done this, who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing?" And Esther points to Haman and says, "This man." Now, not only did he have a bad morning, he's about to have a bad afternoon. It's going from bad to worse for this guy. Very interesting when you go through this. Let's go all the way down to the end of verse 9. Then the king says to the guards there, one of the guards says, "You know what? Haman was trying to have Mordecai killed, whom you have just honored, and built a gallows to hang him." And so the king says, "Well, hang Haman on it instead." So verse 10, they hang Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's wrath subsided. True godly leadership, brethren, sometimes means taking on a mantle of responsibility that may seem out of your control. As Esther was going through this, as Mordecai was going through this, I don't believe that they thought in their minds, "I'm going to be some great leader one of these days that's going to take care of the people of God." That wasn't what was happening. But brethren, they were ready. When the time came for them to stand and be counted, they were ready. Will you be ready when God requests your help? Think about who Esther was and what she was asked to do. What might we be asked to do in the future? Will you ever be asked to stand before a king? It's possible. I've met a few along the way. I've met some kings and queens that came to Ambassador College. I didn't have to stand up and be counted, but I was able to meet them. Maybe a judge. Maybe we have to stand before a judge one of these days because we have disobeyed a law of the land to keep the law of God. Will you be ready? How about your mother or father? Is there a chance that you may have to stand up against your parents? I had to do that and say, I won't do this. This is against the law of God. I cannot do this. That's tough to stand up against your mom and dad. What decision will you make? Will you say, "Not me"? Or will you say, "If I perish, I perish"? Let's end the story. Esther chapter 9. There's a lot more in here that we could go through, but just for the sake of time, let's start to bring this to a close. Chapter 9 and verse 18. But the Jews who were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day, as well as on the 14th. And on the 15th day of the month, they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore, the Jews of the villages who dwelt in the unwalled towns celebrated the 14th day of the month of Adar with gladness and feasting as a holiday and for sending presents to one another. Verse 26, and they called these days Purim, after the name Pur, which means casting lots. Think about this from the perspective of a young queen. Queen Esther came a long way, from an orphan to the queen of an empire, from saying, "Not me," to saying, "If I perish, I perish." God was able to use her in a mighty way because she was willing to stand up and be counted, even though she was a young female. Her bravery caused an annual celebration that is still celebrated by the Jews to this day. They still celebrate the Feast of Purim. Something that probably a teenage girl did 2,700 years ago, when she stood in the gap. Let's finish in Ephesians chapter 1, and I want to bring this back to us. As we think about what Esther went through and what she did, I'd like to go to Ephesians chapter 1, and I want to think about that, but also think about what we are doing at this time and in this place. Ephesians 1, verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places of Christ. You have been called into his church and you have been richly blessed. But with that blessing comes responsibility. Verse 4, just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, we should be holy and without blame before him in love. Before you ever have to stand up before the king or the judge or your parents, you need to be holy and without blame. Verse 5, having predestined us to adoption as sons by Jesus Christ to himself. She was adopted into Mordecai's family, but she also is adopted into the kingdom of God. And she will be there and we will meet her someday. According to the good pleasure of his will, to the praise of the glory of his grace, which he made us accepted in the beloved. Verse 7, in him, through Jesus Christ, we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins according to the riches of his grace, which he made to abound toward us in all wisdom and prudence. And look at verse 9. And he has made known to us the mystery of his will according to his good pleasure, which he has purposed in himself. You've been given a knowledge that will help you in a time of need. You know that these 80 years that we go through now is not the goal. The goal is the kingdom of God. And you know that he is allowing some things to happen, but through his good pleasure, he has let you in on a secret. And you can be used mightily in his work. Look at verse 10. In the dispensation of the fullness of times, he will gather all of us together in Christ, which are in heaven and on earth, to him. In him also we have obtained an inheritance, being predestined according to the purpose of him who works all things according to the counsel of his will. He has called us for a purpose, to be used as he sees fit, and he will do that. Verse 12, that we who first trusted in Christ should be to the praise of his glory. There will come a time when we will be called out of this world to represent the future government of God. The time is coming. Will you be ready for it? One day, God will gather all of us together with the returning Jesus Christ. But for now, we are to live according to his purpose, according to his will, and according to the counsel of his will. As we trust in Christ, we should live to the praise of his glory and represent him with humility and steadfast truth. Brethren, we have to know that whatever trials we go through, just as Esther and Mordecai went through, they're for the purpose of God. He will use that for not only his glory, but to help us learn and to grow. Knowing that he will take care of us, knowing that he will never abandon you, when he calls for a special job, we need to be like Esther, and we need to stand and be counted.